views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the views or endorsement of any entity. Nothing being said on this podcast should be considered as investment advice.
GM, GM, welcome to 100 Proof, your weekly variety show that covers all things NFTs, non-fungible tokens, for those of you that are new to the show. Derek, welcome.
It's great to be back. Another Friday in the hot seat. We've got a good show. We got Sam in Wisconsin, which is awesome. Sam, how are you doing out there, man?
I'm good. I grew up here, and it's always great to be back.
Big Packers fan, I hear. Sam is.
Is that true?
I'm like a fair weather Wisconsin fan, so I loved watching the Bucks win it a couple years ago, and I root for the Brewers, and of course, Packers. That's kind of a no brainer if you grew up here.
Yeah. My whole family, on my dad's side, grew up as Packers. Yeah,
that's awesome.
All right, we got Amanda, of course, on the community side, and looking at all the channels. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, everyone. You haven't even mentioned Derek's sweet hoodie, but I'm also rocking
my
sweet blue hoodie.
We are matching.
I love it.
You've got the blue. I've got the black. I actually really like these hoodies.
They're great.
So I don't know anything about this company, Mad Happy, but yeah. I can tell you this is one of the more comfy hoodies I now own.
Yeah. So when we heard about this company, Mad Happy, a while ago, over a year ago, and they actually got on the map because LeBron started wearing their gear. Mm. And they're all about like mental health and helping you through mental health struggles. And so we saw their hoodies and started like checking out their gear. And it's like the thickest, highest, awesome, most durable, insane hoodies.
Yeah.
And did a little partnership with them. So those are coming very soon.
I'm a fan.
How's the shoe game going today? We always check out the shoes.
The shoe game is good. I don't know if we can get a look, but I'm wearing did you ever see that movie Sandlot back in the
day?
So Benny the Jet Rodriguez wore these shoes called the PF Flyers, and there's this whole thing about them. So I got really into PF Flyers maybe about a decade ago. And so every once in a while I'll pick up a new pair, and these were like the 40th or 50th anniversary of that. The appearance in that movie. So
nice.
Up the special edition PF Flyers.
Love it. I went with the split toe.
These are amazing.
Japanese little Nikes.
I wish we could get a close up on this. This is pretty gnarly stuff. There's like denim in there. There's a split toe. There's.
Yeah, my kids this morning were just like, Dada, what the hell are those? They didn't say it that way, but it was close.
Never seen anything like them.
Yeah, I had them. There we go.
You look like a Ninja Turtle.
Wow.
Like a cool Ninja Turtle.
I think they're pretty dope, though. Look at those.
They're actually sweet.
Yeah. So these are, it was a Japanese only edition. Anyway,
I'm a fan.
I saw you yesterday too, Kevin, and you were wearing like the brightest silver shoes. I didn't get a chance to like tease you on those. I thought that you weren't going to wear anything crazier, but you came in.
Those will make an appearance on one of these shows at some point. But yeah,
Kevin has some cool clothes. I will admit, he's got a sweet closet.
I appreciate that. All right, well, onwards into NFTs. One thing first, though, we did a little company offsite. So this entire week has been dedicated to us doing a multi-day offsite. We had, the entire staff.
How many people?
Amanda, do we know what the total count was? Was it about 30 people that showed up?
Yeah, a little over 30 people.
I don't know if people know that Proof is that big.
Yeah.
30 people.
Yeah, it's a good team. I mean, we've got like, there's obviously a lot of them on the engineering side because we just have a lot of work to do there over the next, forever. so there's, we're pretty heavy on the design and engineering side. And then, a couple BD folks, obviously on the curation side, got some team there as well. So it's, people forget, to run something like this, where you take a look at this podcast, the multi-camera shoot, you can't see here, but we have a live countdown clock with a rundown and everything. It's like, there's 1, 2, 3, basically 4 people behind the scenes to pull all this off, all the content that we produce. So it adds up.
Yeah.
But I think we're actually at the perfect size. Like we've got the team in place to do Mythics. We've got the team in place to do Talons, and we're just kind of holding more or less at this size. So
what was good. the, What were some of like the big takeaways for you? And I will say, so I had a chance to meet a bunch of them on one of the nights I came out. We did a little fireside for the whole team, which was a lot of fun for me. But for you, what was like, I don't know, maybe a couple of the highlights from the week out with the whole crew.
Well, I'd say a couple things. And then Amanda, you can, and Sam, you guys can chime in here, but like, I'll just say, give out one. One of the things we did on the first day, which I thought was really helpful, is we just addressed the uncertainty, like the FUD head on, and said, this is where we are as a company, as a collection, you know, and talked about, and kind of went around the room and all discussed like, what is our greatest fears here about this space, about what we're building. And then it got into more tactics later on how we can become a more nimble team. You know, we're kind of creating these new pods internally so that we can execute on more things simultaneously, which is quite nice. But yeah, Sam, Amanda, anything you want to add there?
I think it was just really kind of important to use the Mythic story. I think what has been really kind of amazing is a lot of people are asking us, you know, why are we doing Mythics right now? It's a bear market. It's hard to do. And I think, you know, having an opportunity to really kind of tell the story of Mythics to the entire team and see how that sort of resonated with them made us even more excited to release Mythics, because it's a very like applicable story to what's going on in the space, what it's like to be a creator, what it's like to launch anything. And I think, you know, the biggest part of that story is facing your fears, you know, doing things that that move you and just, you know, not really worrying about the potential downfalls. Don't let fear overwhelm you enough to stop you from doing something. And I think that really kind of got all of us really fired up. And it allowed us to kind of think about the future using that sort of lens. So, you know, that's the power of storytelling. And I think that that's what we really, really kind of doubled down on this week. So it was, it was exciting.
It's a great way to put it. Like, we had that phrase, what would you build if you weren't afraid? Because so many times, afraid to fail. Yeah. So many times, you know, you're reactive to things like all of a sudden, like, holy shit, this happens from the community. Like, oh, we made a misstep here. And you get a little bit conservative around how big of risk you're willing to take on going forward, you know? Definitely. And we definitely want to continue to push things, take on a ton of risk. And so that was a big focus.
That's awesome. Sam, what about you, man?
I agree. You know, I think, you know, this is my first job where I've really worked remote, you know, and definitely a downside to not getting to spend much time with your colleagues. So it's always just great to get everyone together and to get to see people face to face. And I also agree with Amanda, like learning the narrative kind of behind a lot of just the artist's intention with Mythics, I think just got everyone in that room pumped about getting this out the public.
Awesome. Yeah, good times. There were some tears shed too, like we had some really? Like, yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, we'll get into this in a minute with what how hard it is to build in this space, but like I really appreciated the kind of vulnerability that our team put forward, because it's and just to like hug people and see people in real life was huge.
That's awesome.
Before we get too far into the show though, I did want to mention that we have Danny from Onchain Monkeys that's going to be joining us for the show in just a little bit. So that's also really exciting. He's been doing some, talk about a great builder in the space and someone that's willing to take on risk. He's done some crazy stuff. So very excited for that.
I also want to remind everyone that we are third week in a row trying at Twitter Spaces, really trying to bring in some other audiences. And I think we have it. I think we are successful. We are good to go. So if you guys like it, let us know how you feel about an audio only. Obviously we want to bring everyone in here. We have a lot of visuals, but I think it's always good to just kind of to be out there on Twitter. So check that out. If maybe you can't watch along sometimes, maybe you can just listen along. So awesome. Just want to let everyone know that. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, speaking of building in Web3, you know, I have this internal saying that is like about every 2 months a major project does something where a community is like, that was wrong, and you get a lot of blowback, and that's the nature of building in public. It's the nature of taking on a lot of risk and trying new things. I don't think there's any way to avoid that in this space, especially with a lot of opinions and emotions and where prices are right now. We saw some craziness around the Azuki drop.
Yeah, and I'll say you know, it if anything this week is just it reinforces listen, like we're in uncharted territory with a lot of these projects. Like this idea that we now have these objects that reflect, you know, your pseudo online internet identity, but then are also abstractions for being part of these larger communities that exist globally, where teams and also community members are incentivized to drive value and build value together in all sorts of new directions. Like the concept of this and co-ownership and community participation being tempered by a team's involvement, like these are just like all over the internet. This is a petri dish that I think is just like we're still at the early stages of figuring out how we're going to do this as an industry for this specific vertical. And that means there's going to be trials and tribulations and ups and downs. And I frankly, there's no team that has been spared from that.
Yes.
Every team that is pushing forward in this corner of this industry, let's just call it like the PFP and community organization, like vertical, everyone is like, you know, constantly trying to duck and weave and figure out where higher ground is and build merit and get to higher ground. And I would just say it's happened, you know, over and over and over again, whether it's Proof or Yuga or Azuki or take your pick of one of these leading projects. I mean, all of them have had some varying degrees of ups and downs. So
what's your take? I mean, we can go around and talk about this. I of course want to be very careful here in that, you know, we also run at Proof, our own PFP project. What I can say, and I guess I'll kick things off, is like, I've been a huge fan of the art of Azuki.
It's amazing.
Like from day one, it's like, it's beautiful stuff. Like obviously, like look at the way I dress. Like I love Japanese style, like anime and all of those vibes. And so this is always kind of like giving me that type of vibe coming from Azuki. And so, you know, I've always wanted to collect one and I never have. And so I was pretty excited for this drop to come out.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the controversial thing to say, but I think the only thing that I looked at was like, they just looked too similar to the original collection.
That seems to be like where everyone has kind of converged. And I think that probably wouldn't have been a problem, but I think the way the drop was structured and what, you know, the way it was presented beforehand and kind of like the hype or the communications around what, you know, this new kind of character class that was being introduced into like the Azuki Garden, how it was presented beforehand, I think maybe ran at odds with where the art landed.
Yeah.
And it being too similar and not enough differentiation between the original collection. And frankly, like I understand why the Azuki team did it. They have built something that I think really resonates from an art perspective. They wanted to extend that further to introduce these objects to new collectors and bring in new people. But you know, they're building in public and they've got stakeholders that are involved that, you know, there's a fine line between like building completely transparently and getting as much feedback as possible while also keeping energy and enthusiasm around mystery.
Yes.
And it's a very fine line to walk. And I think in the case of this, you know, they just misjudged in a couple of places exactly where to be on that, on either side of that line.
Sam, I'm curious, you know, you obviously track this industry so closely and you have the analytical kind of side of component of this. You know, what are your thoughts here? What's your take?
I think that, first of all, you know, I think one thing that the industry started to realize over a year ago is that airdrops are very, very hard to get right. You know, and because you're adding more supply, you know, and you're taking money out of the hands of your, I mean, not taking, but you're selling the new NFTs for ETH. And, you know, I think if you look at Azuki, their beans drop a year and a half ago was one of the absolute best drops ever. You know, they dropped 20,000 NFTs and the price of Azuki after that event went from like 18, 20 to 30. You know, that was right before kind of the Zagabond doxing and all that. That came with that, but the two things they did in that time were, one was they dropped it to holders, you know, as for free, and two is it was a totally different genre of collectability. Like it looked nothing like I think it was this perfect combination of bringing traits over but to a totally new form factor. You didn't know how the beans were going to play in the ecosystem, you know. So I think that those were kind of the ingredients for some of the early airdrops back in 2021, 2022 that went well. Mutant Apes had some of that in common, a little bit different because they did charge for half of them like this one. Whereas this one, I think, you know, on taking money out of the ecosystem, like you got to do it to make money, but it's just harder. It just ups the bar because that's, you know, that's just 20,000, I think, 20,000 less ETH that your loyal holders can use to sweep later and stuff like that. So that makes it harder. And then, I think like you really want to know that there's an expansion of the narrative, expansion in the level of collectability, something totally new that you didn't see coming. It's really hard to do this right. So I think even if they had nailed this, it would have been hard. But making it so similar, turning it a bit into a meme. Like, I remember when I first saw it for the first time, you know, everyone was just so surprised. And they even said on the call yesterday, they said, if like something to the effect of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I just said, like, if it ain't broke, then protect it would kind of be more my approach. So I don't know. I think, and it's tough. As you guys said, this is at the price point they were at, this is a market that almost demands perfection. You know, it's every single project, one after the next, has seen the difficulties of kind of the Blur farming pool, the quick trading, like all of those create headwinds, and you really got to execute flawlessly in order to avoid it. We're seeing it a little bit from D-Gods. We've seen it a little bit from Captains. We saw a little bit from Azuki, but when the community comes after you, it becomes so hard. And, you know, we've seen so many new Azukis dumped into the Blur pool for the first time, and I think that stuff is tough to recover from on a short-term basis.
Yeah, they came to, I guess the conclusion of this is essentially that they're going to change the background so that it is visually distinctive, which I think is a huge, that sounds like the right move to me. Just so that, like, you know, if you think of this first and foremost as like a PFP, and you want people to know where does someone stand in the ecosystem? You know, you want them to be able to visually quickly say, oh, either that's an original Azuki or that is, you know, an elemental, right? And like, you want that distinction to happen within a quarter of a second, not like have to zoom in to decide, you know, which one. And don't get me wrong, like, please, I'm not hating here. I'm just stating that, like, that would be my, as a collector with my collector hat on, that's what I would want to protect that original collection.
Yeah.
So changing the background, I think is huge. I think that's the right move.
Yeah, it sounds like that has been the response that has most resonated with people. I've seen, you know, some threads here and there that I think people want to keep the integrity of what they got and would prefer to kind of keep the art style kind of unmodified. But I think by and large, most of the comments I've seen is support around at least playing with a few different ideas around changing the backgrounds to make this collection stand out a bit more from the original.
They've had some high-end sales, though, we have to say. I mean, hats off to them. Even some of the high-end elementals have sold for quite a bit. We have them here up on the screen. 40 ETH sales, you know.
Yes, Sam was flagging this for us earlier. Sam, maybe you can talk a little bit about what you're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, I mean, one thing that I think is so distinctive about Azuki is the spirit DAO and just the huge role that some of their biggest holders play. And I think that this, it's three question marks. And I think that this three question mark type, if you look at type, it's three question marks. That type is kind of being seen as the new spirits of this project. Then you also have that frog that sold for 36 ETH. That was Matcha Big Brother buying one of those that's valuable because of its simplicity. But what I'd say to what Kevin said on the backgrounds is I agree. I personally like the art a lot more. I also agree with Derek that in this community, there are people who really value the integrity of keeping things as they are. I am someone who, after the drop, there was a video game that came out where you had to guess if anything was an elemental or a Azuki OG. And even people like me had a hard time with it. So I think like that meme they're getting rid of, right? You change the colors here. Mm-hmm. I think the new ones do look really good and make it visually distinctive. And I think that is like a good change. It does alienate some people who bought one knowing what they want. I would not say it's huge though. I don't think this tackles some of the core issues of adding a lot of supply, of not expanding the narrative in a way that people fully understand quite yet, of having a catalyst past without people fully, you know, with people a little bit in the dark, right? And I'd say I agree. I like it, and I really like the art, and I tweeted that this morning. I wouldn't say it's huge though. I think it's a nice incremental step, if you know, and it's going to be a vote, so we'll see if people actually do it.
Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen, and actually, let's get Amanda's take. We haven't had Amanda chime in yet.
What do you think, Amanda?
I think it's, it's really interesting to come from somebody who was a collector, you know, first, and now I'm working in Web3. I'm always sort of watching all of this news, how teams sort of handle it. And it's been really, really interesting to just see. I think everyone is right. Like, especially in Web3, you have this social contract between, you know, a team and a collector, and that's obviously something that we've learned. We are not new to that idea, and that we learned that with CC0 and what that means. And so now I think the team has to make this sort of difficult decision: to do you mess with this social contract that you had, that when you bought something it stays the same, right? So I think changing the backgrounds is like the least difficult and the least sort of jarring of a decision. So it makes sense to kind of go for that. That sort of still also answers how is this different from the original Azuki, right? I think a lot of folks are probably upset because now it's going to clearly look, you know, different, and people will assume it's cheaper. But you never know what could happen in the future. Somebody on the chat, Timothy Lim, made a really good point that says it's important to understand to see before making decisions or announcements that you should think of all the different possibilities of how the space and the market will react, especially because this space is really, really unforgiving, and that's Web3, unfortunately. And that's a really great point as from a holder perspective. I want to say that I hope over time this space also becomes more mature and we start to be a little bit more forgiving and more empathetic and understanding that, you know, if we're going to be here for a really long time, you have to let the teams, you know, make these decisions and trust them to grow your brand that you the way that you want them to, you know. So I think it's just I think we have to find somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, it's this has been a common thread. We've seen the 9GAG CEO come out with a really long post about what it's like to build Web3.
Yeah.
You know, this is we're seeing these posts from founders. It feels like almost weekly now, with just a lot of like look at this. This yeah, here's the 9GAG post here saying it's damn hard to build in Web3. When you ask when you have utility, people ask for art. When you have art, people ask for utility. It is insanely challenging because it's a very public thing, and it's something where all of us as project builders, from every person in your staff, reads the at replies, you know, of the entire project, and you see people like literally like saying some of the most insane things and tearing down oftentimes some founders and creators and anyone on these projects. So it can be challenging to just shrug that off, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Building two in things, this space is very difficult.
I was just gonna say two things that kind of jump at me is like, one, I think because everything's so public on Twitter, and with Twitter, you know, with Twitter, just if there are 100 people and 95% of people like you and 3% don't, those three are going to command all the attention.
They're vocal gonna be the minority. Nastiest.
Yeah, they're going to get the conversation. But then the second thing is, I think we're kind of victims of our own success in the sense that a lot of the problem is these price points are just so high. And when people are spending, you know, $20,000 on an Azuki, you know, in our case, it was $50,000 on Moonbirds, Captains, you know, 15th, like, yes, like those people, when they're spending that for an NFT, are just going to be extremely critical, you know, and it's because there's a lot on the line for them and they're nervous themselves. And I think that in some ways, we're just kind of victims of our own success in the sense that prices got so elevated, particularly in the bull market, but even a Bored Ape is still $60,000, right? Like when you start comparing that to real world things you can get at those price points, you know, people start saying, yeah, I do have, when things don't go the way I want, I'm going to get upset. So I think you have this double combination of one, it's like a very social media driven product. And two, like we got off to really high prices really quickly and there's a bit of a calibration.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's continue forward and, yeah. And move in. And by the way, I do wish Azuki all the best, success here. I don't think the project is dead. I think
no one's
saying that, but I don't think this is going to be a long-term problem for them. I think this is a small little bump and things will be back to normal. They have their videos are so good.
Yeah.
I'll
also just say these guys are, I mean, like they've got all the right ingredients. They've got an amazing collector base. They have amazing aesthetic. They put on amazing events. They've teased up amazing products and services. I don't know if you had a chance to check out their anime video, but it's, top notch quality.
Insane.
These guys aren't going anywhere. And if anything, these events have a way of ossifying holder bases with community members, with the builders, and they're able to build on that for the future.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of collections, we have our own upcoming Mythics collection. And so let's take a look at the latest edition of Mythics Chronicles.
Here I am, beautiful, sunny LA, walking towards the Foundry, Proof's new event space, and figured I'd take a few minutes and tell you about the day I met the Dread. Gotta stroke the beard to be really wise. So about 10 years ago, one of the top animation studios gave me a call and invited me to come in and pitch some ideas. I was pumped. Like, it was a pipe dream that I never thought would actually happen. And I went in, I pitched a bunch of ideas, and we whittled it down to one. And every day for the next 9 months, I put everything I had into this pitch. I developed characters, story, the storyboards, artwork. Really just kind of put myself into every frame and every idea about the show. So I get into this meeting, the exec sits down, looks me directly in the eyes and says, "So who are you and why are you here?" And in that moment, my heart just sank because I realized no one had told her about the backstory and what led us to this moment. So I proceeded with the pitch, and about halfway through, she stops us and she says, "You know what your problem is? You don't belong here. You don't belong in film and in television." I felt my heart rip out of my chest. I felt hopeless. I felt like a shell of a human being. In that moment, those words validated every fear that I had. I walked into that room. I thought that creativity was endless. My ideas were boundless. I left that room and I walked into the embrace of the dread. Every time I picked up a pen to draw, every time I hopped on a call to pitch a project, that voice came up, but I wasn't worthy. That voice of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And it changed the course of my career for the next decade. When I sat down to work on the Mythic story, almost instantly that voice popped up again. "This story doesn't belong here. No one's going to like it. You don't belong here. Moonbirds don't belong here." A quick side story, but something that happened a couple years ago is a little 7-year-old daughter. They were having like a school fair. So we gave her some money and she found this little rock and bought it. She used all of her money for that. And she came home, she handed it to me and she said, "Dad, this is so that you can be brave." Because she could see how stressed out, full of anxiety I was. This little stone, actually I have it right here. Just this little stone shaped like a heart. You know, that little $5 rock, it was just a worthless object that had no meaning to anyone. The minute my daughter handed it to me, it became an invaluable object that I hold dear to me. So I sat down, I had the rock on my desk, and I asked myself the question, what would you do if you weren't afraid to fail? And from there, I started writing the Mythic story. It's a deeply personal story, but I also feel like it's most everyone's story in some way, shape, or form. There's a certain point in our life where we meet the dread and our life changes. For me, Mythics is all about creating these charged objects, about creating characters with a deeper meaning, something that you hold onto, that you lash onto, that you identify with more than just, oh, here's like my visual representation of myself. But this character stands for everything that I believe in, everything that I aspire to. So that way you can pull this character out. You can look at it and remind yourself that you're not the only one. There's every other single holder that has one of these mythics. They're in the same boat as you. They're all aspiring to something. Just maybe we can help each other out and we can actually reach our potential. So here's the thing with mythics, I was able to sit down and pull from inspiration, create not just my story or Proof's story, but our collective story. It's something that we're all deeply proud of, and Justin's going to share that soon. But in the meantime, I'm just going to go hang out with my friends.
Oh man,
that was good.
I love
it. Shevers.
Yeah, Colin is obviously such a special and an important part of our team here, and to see him get really personal and share a lot of the backstory here is just it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
I mean you can tell, and you'll see this with any member of our team, and I saw this throughout the offsite, that these people deeply care about what they're doing, and they care about the Web3 community. They want this to succeed, and they're going to build out a really deep backstory here with Mythics and some serious IP. I mean, this is going to be ownable IP. not like the last time. and we're gonna do some fun things with it. Gotta poke and joke about that a little bit, but it's exciting. It's an exciting launch. It's a horrible time to launch anything, but it is a very exciting launch for us, and we're excited to share more of that story with you in the coming weeks.
I forget who it was. There was a, I think it was an artist that was tweeting this last week. I think I can't remember who it was, but they were saying there's a number of artists that are kind of holding back their work as the bear market persists, or as there's just not a demand side of the market like there was 12 months ago or 24 months ago. And he was making the point that, there's, when you make art, when you make work, like it needs to be out there in the world. It like needs to inspire you as a creator, need to feel inspired, and the making of the work itself shouldn't be stunted or held back just because there's maybe not a consuming audience like there was, or there may be a more optimal time a year from now. So I am super, super stoked to see you guys roll this thing out, support it with great creative and story. And dude, let's go.
Yeah. I mean, for people that weren't there, CryptoPunk sat at the floor for years. And just for next to nothing. And then
Punks,
boom,
squiggles, a number of these collections just sat there in obscurity.
All right, so we're going to get to Onchain Monkey and Danny here shortly, but real quick, your announcement.
Yeah, so I love these. So it's the end of the month. As many folks know, I own a gallery out in Marfa, Texas, which everyone who's listening to the show, you should make sure to get your Airbnb for the Art Blocks weekend in Marfa. I believe it's September 21st to September 24th of this year. The Art Blocks team and our squad have been planning some things through Glitch Gallery. It's the name of the gallery that I own out there. And our first product is this product called Every 30 Days. Some of you know where we work with Danvis for an IRL exhibition that is also streamed digitally and paired with a written piece and a digital poster that you can exit through the gift shop with every 30 days. And we've done two so far. They've gone actually like quite well. The first one was X Copies Right Click and Save with Cosimo, who was the collector of that object. The second was with Claire Silver for her Genesis collection with the object owned by Flamingo DAO. And so we're now rounding the end of the month, and we're launching a third one as we move into July 1st. And I'm happy to share for the first time who that's going to be. And we will be featuring a collection that many know and love, and it's called CryptoPunks. And the collector that we are working with is Snowfro himself. And so this is a first look at the poster, the digital object that we sell as you exit through the gift shop. And I'm really excited about this exhibition. We've been heads down. Malta has been writing this amazing piece on the lineage and the history of CryptoPunks. He's interviewed a bunch of folks. We've got some great stories and some great analogies and some great tie back to just the traditional art world and this idea of identity on chain and what that means for both the presentation of self and then also through the lineage of art history. So it's going to be a fun exhibition. You'll be able to see it live for 30 days in Marfa, Texas, or on the internet at Glitch, our website, and you can follow us on Twitter at Glitch Marfa. So excited for everyone to check that out starting this Saturday.
So awesome. Love this. And so this is just tell us how you came to this poster.
Yeah. So this poster is designed by a designer that I work closely with. His name's Atlee. He's designed a number of stuff for Glitch in the past and also for my company Collab Currency. But we walked Atlee through kind of the history of punks. We shared with him the early draft of the story and the exhibition statement that we're putting together. And his interpretation was really to just take a number of the elements that have made the CryptoPunks project special and build somewhat of like a collage around Snowfro's object for this month's poster. It's, I think that there's a little Easter egg in there. I'll let people find it themselves, but one of my, this is the third poster. It's one of my favorites. And I think it, I'm excited. I think it does a great job of storytelling. I think a number of reasons why this project has resonated with people visually.
So cool. Awesome. All right. Well, let's move on. We're very excited today to have a special guest. We have Danny from On-Chain Monkey, who is the CEO. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin. Great to be here.
So glad to have you. We've been trying to get this set up here for a few weeks, and I know you have been so just insanely busy. And I got to say, like, when I think about projects that are always pushing the boundaries, like in terms of, you know, obviously the original On-Chain Monkey, what you did there with it was a single transaction to put everything on chain, right? Like, you were the first ones to pull that off.
Yeah, for a fully on-chain PFP collection. Yeah, we're the first to do that in one transaction.
That was
part of it.
I remember that being the case, and I was just like, how the hell did they do that? And then we, well, of course, like, we were in the middle of like thinking about starting to put ours on chain with Moonbirds and all of that. But and then, you know, obviously very early adopter with Ordinals, and I would love to pick your brain on that front. I would say we are both very Ordinal curious, like,
you Ordinal know, curious for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, paint a picture here, both of where On-Chain Monkeys has been and where you plan on taking it, and now, and how that intersection of Ordinals, you know, at what point in time, did that show up on your radar? And is that the future? Like, are you ever coming back to ETH, or are you Ordinals forever?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of ways to start this conversation. I think, let me start with just OCM Dimensions. I think that's a good starting point. So OCM Dimensions is an art collection I created, officially launched on June 15th. So pretty recent, you know, just, I guess, you know, 2 weeks ago. And it took basically my whole life experience, my lifetime, to create this statue, this art collection. And there's a number of things that are quite significant of it that, you know, the market doesn't understand yet. And it goes back to really understanding actually crypto and Bitcoin to understand first Ordinals and then to understand OCM Dimensions. So, you know, my story is, you know, back in 2013, I started to Stanford Bitcoin meetup because, you know, I was fascinated by Bitcoin. I want to, you know, let the world know and build community around Bitcoin and, you know, teach how important Bitcoin is, you know, for the world. I also started a Bitcoin exchange in 2013 called MyCoin, and it's the longest running and the biggest cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, you know, and cryptocurrency exchange in Taiwan today. So, you know, that's kind of my background on Bitcoin. You know, I've been a big Bitcoin person and building on Bitcoin for many years. Now, fast forward to 2 years ago, I started, you know, the company MediGood to build actually NFTs on Ethereum, right? Which is kind of a move from Bitcoin, because Ethereum, well, you know, I saw the power of NFTs as a way to, you know, the tool for building a community. You know, art is also a great use case. And we launched On-Chain Monkey, which is actually my art. It's basically, you know, my art that I wanted to do, as you said, you know, in one transaction, this, you know, whole collection of 10K, right? And the 10K collection being, you know, kind of the thing that CryptoPunks really, you know, made a thing many years ago. So now fast forward to this year. So, you know, Bitcoin has been, you know, still the biggest chain and the most recognized and highest value, you know, cryptocurrency. It's the most secure and it has a very simple design. All right. So I think the starting point for many people, or rather, like, what I recommend many people to do is actually read the Bitcoin white paper, you know, 8 pages, very clear, high level and detailed, actually, description of how Bitcoin works. And it's actually quite important in understanding how other things on top of Bitcoin interact or actually are even relevant. Like, why are Bitcoin Ordinals, you know, relevant for Bitcoin? We really have to understand Bitcoin. But Bitcoin Ordinals is really interesting because you also have to understand NFTs, and the NFT market primarily has been Ethereum, right? For the last 2 years, the big boom in NFTs is because of Ethereum. So now here we are today, right? We're talking about Bitcoin Ordinals, and, you know, what is significant about Bitcoin Ordinals is that it is a very simple and elegant protocol that lives on top of Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin is the, you know, most recognized and highest value blockchain, but it hasn't actually had many applications, like it doesn't have Ethereum's, rich, dApps and developer ecosystem. It wasn't very open to, even though it's an open decentralized chain, actually it wasn't very hospitable for, developers to go and build on Bitcoin. Well, Ordinals protocol in the simple design actually encourages people to actually start doing stuff on Bitcoin. And the first things they did were actually, you could say, inscribe a bunch of CryptoPunks, or they inscribe and other, JPEGs and NFTs from Ethereum. In fact, a lot of Ethereum devs are moving over to Bitcoin now, and Solana devs. So for me, actually, it was really perfect because, I've been doing Bitcoin for so many years. And also, I'm quite familiar with Ethereum and NFTs because, that's what I've been focused on the last 2 years. And as soon as, Ordinals was around, we actually inscribed the first 10K collection on Bitcoin. So OCM was also the first 10K collection overall, like all images, all metadata, all inscribed on the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, and that was back earlier this year.
And one quick question there. I'm curious, Danny, for On-Chain Monkey, when you did that, how did you distribute those? Like, what was that? If I held an On-Chain Monkey, did I automatically get one of the ordinals, or was that for sale? Are they different collections, or how was that done?
Yeah. So it is complicated because it requires kind of understanding Bitcoin too. So the short answer for people who are holding the Ethereum On-Chain Monkeys is that the distribution of the Genesis is the very unique looking SVGs that were inscribed back in September 2021, right, going on 2 years. So, and then we actually inscribed on Bitcoin Ordinals, inscriptions are numbered. So the number that we created the whole collection of 10K Genesis was actually 2021-9, matching the year and the month. So that was also a feat in itself to be able to do that. And so that was also, so inscription 2021-9, so, the year 2021 and the month 9, September, is that inscription was the first 10K of a whole collection, basically On-Chain Monkey Genesis on Bitcoin. And we did it in a way that actually people are just starting to understand the power. So this term recursion has been thrown around, and also parent child and provenance and all that. We did On-Chain Monkey in these very innovative and we are pioneering in these aspects of Bitcoin Ordinals that now people are starting to realize, actually, this is going to be the biggest thing on Bitcoin because of these things like recursion. So Genesis was inscribed back then, and we haven't distributed them yet. They will be, pretty soon. So I start with OCM Dimensions. That is the one that we did. That's the only one we distributed. And that was also inscribed back in February. So basically that was the culmination of, the last 10 years of building on Bitcoin to be able to create, this collection of 300, OCM Dimensions 300 is what we launched on June 15th after first inscribing it, back in February in a pretty early inscription. Even it was before things like Yuga's 12-fold, right? Like we actually did a generative art collection on Bitcoin, actually highlighting the most important thing that has come to Bitcoin in recent years, which is recursion, actually. The power of ordinals using recursion. So that was OCM Dimensions. So
can you explain to people that don't know what that means? What is recursion and how does that apply to NFTs?
Yeah. So the beauty of the Bitcoin chain is that now the definition of an inscription is that it's on chain. It is you have to literally write whatever it is you want to create your NFT. It has to be written onto Bitcoin. You can't write it onto IPFS or any other, let's say a centralized server somewhere. While on Ethereum, ERC-721, the kind of token standard for NFTs on Ethereum is you just point somewhere, right? Either to IPFS or it's like the design is for pointers. So that's how everyone has done it. And that's how the market appreciates or understands NFTs. On Bitcoin has turned it around and said, no, we don't want pointers elsewhere because, Bitcoin is the most secure you could say, database or store, data store in the world. So if we're going to make digital artifacts or NFTs on Bitcoin, it should all be on chain, you know, actually on the Bitcoin blockchain, no pointers allowed. So that means that any NFT you make on Bitcoin is going to be more expensive, because Bitcoin will be basically the most expensive digital storage, you know, space, you know, in the world, just because of the nature. Everyone has to use it for Bitcoin transactions. So now you're adding all these inscriptions on top of that. So, you know, the fee, you have to pay for what you use. And if it's that model, then, you know, if you inscribe, let's say, a Bored Ape, a Bored Ape file, you know, can be as big as 300 kilobytes. That's actually pretty huge. So recursion allows, so one, and I'm just going to talk about one aspect of recursion, but actually recursion is more powerful than the thing I'm talking about now. But basically one aspect of recursion is that you can reuse data so that the file size is much smaller. But it's actually much bigger than that, because in terms of, we're not just talking about just, you know, images, image files. It's actually, you can describe, you know, code. And code is a lot more powerful than, you know, bits and bytes of, you know, RGB colors. So the code is actually what we use, you know, to create OCM dimensions. And without recursion, then still all the code has to be just stuck in that one inscription. But with recursion, you can reference other code and reuse code. And then you basically have like a programming platform or like an app platform where you can build basically an app store on top of Bitcoin. And, you know, OCM dimension.
It's basically linking together inscriptions to create one cohesive code base that can then be run to generate some type of output. Is that basically what you're saying?
Which is actually yes, and it's actually a beautiful thing, because the art that you create from that is more than a static, you know, image or even a, like a static movie file. It's actually being created on the fly, so it can be interactive. Right, and that's what OCM Dimensions is. It's actually rendered from the Satoshi. You can see it in full res. In fact, it scales to whatever resolution your display is. So if your display is 8K, then every pixel is picture perfect in that.
Yeah, 8K we've got display. One up right here on the screen here that we're showing off. So it's basically, I mean, this is it's kind of similar to art blocks in some sense, in that you've got the rendering being done. You know, the P5JS and everything can be stored on chain, and then rendering can be done fully on chain. Correct.
And it's open and decentralized. So, you know, art blocks requires their centralized server still, even though the parameters are there for someone to figure out. But this actually, any explorer that opens up the ordinal will see it all rendered and on chain, and you know, everyone can use it.
I'm curious when what are the limitations though? Because in some sense, I get what you're saying, because it's code, and then and people can create, you know, generative art with this. You can create pretty much anything that you'd want. But when I think about some of the great, let's call it high res photography or video art, this great artist Derek that we've had on the show a couple times, you know, these can be, let's just call it 50 plus megabytes in size. Like, Is there something where, I mean, I have to imagine that this breaks down eventually, and that it just becomes too cost prohibitive to put on Bitcoin.
No, Bitcoin is not for every use case. Bitcoin is for the Bitcoin use case. So this is where, you know, you have to understand the medium, right? Like if you're a sculptor and you work with marble, you can't take marble and make a photograph out of it, right? It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
So I think some things don't make sense on Bitcoin, but some things are actually perfect. So basically we're not limited to art, but if we're just focused on art, yeah. So Bitcoin art is going to be a thing, and it actually will be many types of things. And the generative art side, right? Like basically, you know, art blocks, that type of generative art, it all fits very naturally on Bitcoin, and people will discover more things like that. So in terms of art, yeah, I think there will be an exciting, you know, early explorations the next couple of months and years. But I'm excited by actually bigger picture outside of art, as in it's just in terms of apps and programs. Now you have a platform that's open and decentralized that people can build on. What you had with Ethereum smart contract, you didn't have on Bitcoin, and now you do.
One question for you there. You know, I noticed when Ordinals launched, there was this like mad rush to like come in, and a lot of people were jumping in, and that's awesome. But also I saw the transactions just go through the roof and create a massive backlog on Bitcoin. Are there bottlenecks here that you're worried that if there is some type of crazy mass adoption, call it an order of magnitude or more, you know, down the road in terms of size and people, the demand to use this technology on Bitcoin, are we going to run into some issues there?
No, I think it's actually a beautiful thing. The theme market was designed and worked perfectly in the last few weeks and months, right? So if there's high demand and high use of Bitcoin, then the fees go up and the miners make more money. And people are also incentivized to do things that are worth that money, right? Mm. When you inscribe, like when anyone inscribes something, right, they're paying money to inscribe it. So they think whatever they're doing is worth that money. And so it's a supply and demand and kind of a, free market kind of scenario.
Dan, it's been a lot of fun to get inside your brain a little bit and learn a bit about more about inscriptions and OCM dimensions and the procedural on-demand way that these things are being generated. I hadn't considered that when I was looking originally at what Kev has pulled up here on Magic Eden. Where my mind goes is a lot of these techniques, I think, my view is, I also agree with one of the original statements you made, which is you have this hyper secure, longest running chain called Bitcoin. And there is something about the permanency and security guarantees of putting work and storing work directly on a chain of that size and of that length. And the thing that I'm trying to question right now is, if we look out 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and knowing that there's a few credible environments by which to deploy work, why will people choose to inscribe on Bitcoin versus something like the EVM or on Ethereum?
Well, I think both chains will continue to grow. And the advantage for Ethereum is, well, in terms of you're looking at on-chain, right? Ethereum wasn't really designed to do on-chain. So, when we did OCM, right, we had to kind of basically hack the EVM system to do the collection. Bitcoin is really designed, or Bitcoin Oranos was designed for this. So I think people will find the right basic medium for their work. So some things will be on Bitcoin, some things will be on Ethereum. I think that for some of the very ultra high value NFTs, I think more people want to do it on Bitcoin because of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin blockchain's properties over Ethereum. Also on-chain, people want to do on-chain works. I think it'll also go towards Bitcoin versus Ethereum. But if you have like big movie files or like the photograph example you said versus the 50 megabyte photo, I think those lend to IPFS, and so it makes sense to do it on Ethereum.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I don't know about you, Derek, and your current thinking on the space, but like I see these different platforms as like you have this built-in audience of people that are Bitcoin fans that are there, totally. That have never collected an NFT, they've never installed totally. An Ethereum wallet ever. Yeah. Like that's awesome. This just gives them more exposure to art. It gives them a way to collect in their own ecosystem. I know some people totally. Are maxis like that. Same thing when I think about, Object with Tezos and some of these other chains. It's like you find your community and you find your place. And to Danny's point, I mean, there'll be different use cases for different chains. Yeah. Like if you need high performance, crazy NFT movement, like maybe you choose Solana for that, right? Because like the transaction fees and, yes. So I'm not a maxi like that.
Though. No, not at all. And one thing I am like just I frankly, like the NFTs on Bitcoin thing made me bullish on Bitcoin again. Like Danny brought it up. He briefly mentioned it, but like there is now a robust fee market that can develop as people are writing inscriptions and transferring value and miners are incentivized to continue to secure the chain. And there were real questions about what happens when block rewards run out, right? And like, can Bitcoin actually sustain itself? And are the incentives such that that chain will be secured in perpetuity if there's no rewards? Well, with the robust fee market, and now that there's economic activity being built here, I mean, there's a real credible, use case for Bitcoin to persist without modifying any of like the core protocol. We didn't really get into that, but as Danny was chatting through this, I was just reflecting that it's just a brilliant way by which to continue to like propagate the chain and in a very secure way. So it's pretty cool. It's been a fun conversation for me to listen in on.
Danny, I'm really curious. A couple last questions for you. A lot of people, especially, at least in my circles, we're still kind of ETH hardcore, NFT collectors. the ordinal space in general was always like, okay, I remember when I was talking to CT about this. She's like, okay, well, if I transfer this, there's a chance that I lose it completely. And I was like, geez, like that sounds like a dangerous place. I know a lot of tooling has happened since, you know, Ordinals first launched. There are now wallets that support this. If people are looking to get into this and they want to play, they want to learn more about how to, you know, actually do this in a safe way, where's the place to start?
Yeah, great question. And I listened in on the segment just before this, right? And I think you're talking about, you know, CryptoPunks. You know, they were very early and people didn't understand NFTs back mm-hmm. then. And in fact, the first CryptoPunk launch, right, they kind of messed that up and then they launched again. And that's kind of the state we're in Ordinals. Most people don't understand. Many people came from Ethereum, so that they don't understand how Bitcoin works. They're thinking their mental model is the Ethereum NFT. And how Bitcoin works is this UTXO model, which I'm going to do some kind of educational series to describe, you know, just the Bitcoin chain and UTXOs. But that's actually quite important to understand an ordinal or inscription on an ordinal. So the question of, you know, yeah, you can easily lose your inscription or your ordinal because you don't understand UTXOs and you send it, right, as a regular. These ordinals actually are regular Bitcoin, and the regular Bitcoin client doesn't know that it's an ordinal, so it could be easily lost. So like we're basically at this stage where you know it's like in the CryptoPunk days back, you know, many years ago, trying to figure out, you know, just, you know, what is an NFT on Bitcoin, and mm-hmm. like, you know, what is interesting like about Bitcoin particular NFTs, right? And that's why we create OCM Dimensions to highlight, you know, all the things that are powerful for ordinals on Bitcoin that are, you know, Bitcoin native, and brings in all the power of what people want to do with NFTs that they've seen on other chains already, but doing it in the Bitcoin native way and actually leveraging what's unique about Bitcoin of being, you know, on chain, having this canvas that we can do this thing, you know, called recursion, and a number of other things. So I think tooling will become more clear. People, the builders, will start understanding also, you know, what they can and can't do, or what actually is the most powerful things they can do on Bitcoin to leverage those that, you know, is different from Ethereum.
One question for you, Danny, like I'm looking at your collection here right now, Magic Eden. And, you know, as someone that likes to play, but not also wants to learn, 0.4 ETH for me to play when I've never done this before. You know, I always want to when I go into any new chain, like when it was Tezos for the first time, I'm buying $10 NFTs so I don't screw anything up, you know, so I make sure that I'm doing things the right way when I'm interacting with a new wallet. Is there any collections or anything, any way out there to like practice more or less before you drop, you know, almost a half? Yeah, exactly.
You've got grails here, Danny. We're trying to figure out where's the building blocks.
Yeah, yeah. The grails are the building blocks, but yeah, I mean, like this is the art. Like this is our collection, like the kind of this is what the power of, I think it's, but how you play though is really learn about Bitcoin and then try to do an inscription yourself, because it's an open. Also, I think actually this is another beautiful thing about Ordinals is that you don't need to deploy smart contracts. Deploying a smart contract is actually super technical, and yeah, you really have to understand how to code and how smart contract works. But for Bitcoin ordinals, if you just want to play and like inscribe a CryptoPunk, which a lot of people did in the early days, all you had to do is, you know, go to one of the sites, like I believe Gamma and a number of others, and you can just basically, you know, right click save a JPEG onto Bitcoin, and then you own that in your Bitcoin wallet, and you can play with that, right? That's the simplest way to do it, and it'll cost you maybe $50, right, to do that. So
That's awesome.
Yeah. That needs to be where I start on all this. You know, we should get into this. Like, I feel like there's enough smoke here
This is fun. This is cool. I'm gonna play around with OCM Dimensions later and take a look at this collection. You've got some cool stuff here, Danny.
Yeah, Danny, I gotta say, you know, thanks for being on the show, and then also thanks for just like being one of those founders that we can always look to and saying I'm willing to push like whatever is possible. Like one of the things I've really respected about your approach to NFTs is you've always said, okay, we did this, now what's next? And every time you drop something, it's not just a minor update. I feel like Onchain Monkey just always is known for like pushing the boundaries. And so I appreciate that as an entrepreneur. So keep doing what you're doing. Love it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk soon and please keep us posted. We can always love to mention any new things that you launch as they come up. But yeah, awesome show.
Good show today. Had a blast. It was fun to meet your crew here in LA at the new spot in downtown LA. And yeah, man, another one in the books. We did.
Yeah. That downtown LA spot, by the way, is going to be a ton of fun. We're going to have some great artists that are working out of there.
I've heard some artists are moving in.
We're talking about having like some plotters there, some really cool equipment, doing some live podcasts there. So just really a space that we can do anything and everything related to art.
It's awesome. I'm a fan. It's also super, it's in super close proximity to me. So I'll be hanging out there if anyone ever wants to join me.
Sam, any last words, anything that we can be picking up right now to flip for a quick 10X?
Yeah, I mean, what I was thinking is for people who are playing the Derek Edwards bingo game at home, we got Petri dish today. We got
Let's
digital
go.
Object today.
Let's go.
I don't think we got Trust Minimized.
Who won? Ledger, so. Who won?
We didn't get Trust Minimized Ledger today.
Yeah, I like to throw a little curveballs in there for folks that are trying to pick the easy ones.
Love Petri dish is a rare.
Well, it's rare. It's rare. It came back, baby.
I might do like an NFT bingo card for Derek. And then like, maybe like if you nail a certain number of them, it gets upgraded to a better NFT.
We should do it. I have, it's funny when we were doing, I know we're out of time, but I'm going to say this last time.
Yeah.
When I was doing the fireside with you for your team a couple nights back, Sam's question was what did you say, Sam? Why do you always hit the same points?
No, it wasn't that. It was just that I think as someone who speaks with you and who interacts and, you know, we're friends, I notice that you're very deliberate about your terminology. So I kind of wanted to understand your thinking behind it because it's clear that thought goes into that. And I just kind of wanted to hear you explain kind of your thought process.
Now people want to know the answer. You can't just leave
people. Do we tell them the answer, Sam?
Yeah, we got an extra minute.
It was a good answer.
All right. I'll riff for just a second. But basically, I think it's so easy to get distracted week to week. We do it on the show. We're just hanging out, chilling, talking about like the new projects that launched this week and what's working, what's not working. But the truth is like there's some real core primitives here that have never existed before. And it's really important to me to draw focus to those things over and over and over again.
Yes.
Because they are very core to why we're all here and the innovation that's happening here and why people will continue to come into the space. And it's things like having a public database, a trust minimized ledger that anyone can read or write to. And I know I say that a lot, but that is an innovation that's never going away. Like we have the ability to have these global ledgers that track information 24/7 that anyone can read, that anyone can write to, that are permissionless, that people can deploy protocols on top of, that people can write assets to. And no matter what's going on with, you know, Azuki or Yuga or Proof or CryptoPunks or what is the, you know, the latest flavor of the week in the drama, or a DeFi protocol has just rugged their user base, or, you know, we've got the SEC charging Coinbase for running an unregistered securities exchange. That primitive and these things are never going away. And frankly, it's just going to continue to draw more and more builders into this space over time. And so I use those same words over and over again, because I want people to always anchor to the real reason we're all here.
Yeah. It's a great point. One, you filled out all the rest of the bingo card, which is great. And two, I think we're starting to see this, because when you see all of these people applying for these ETFs, you know, like the bigs coming in and saying, I want a Bitcoin ETF. And you see actually legislators coming in and saying, I don't think this is going away. And they're right. Like it's not going away. Correct. And it's going to stay here forever. And we just gotta have to keep reminding ourselves that's why we're here. Exactly. Yes, there's the crazy funness that we have
totally,
with art and collectibles and all that, but like this is real durable tech that's going to be here for generations. So.
Exactly.
Thank you, Sam, for getting the rest of that bingo card filled out there. We got it done.
We salute you, Sammy. Thank you, sir.
Amanda, thank you so much. Any last minute community thoughts?
I'm really actually quite motivated by that speech, and I want to say that I want to have a phrase, and I think maybe mine will be Moonbirds. Moonbirds are forever. You know, they're on chain. They're forever. I'm trying to figure out how I can say that over and over again. Moonbirds are forever. That'll be my thing.
Isn't that like some kind of necklace company or diamond? Those diamonds are forever. Yeah.
Don't worry about that part. Moonbirds are the ones.
We'll work on that, Amanda.
Love it. All right, everyone. Happy Friday. Enjoy your weekend. You can always catch us here Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific. And then obviously join in on the conversation on the Discord and say hi. So thank you again to Danny for being on the show.
Thank you, Danny.
And we'll see you soon.